Later, Ignatius Donnelly would recall those heady days of 1856, standing on the broad porch of his new mansion that overlooked the Mississippi River. He wondered to himself, here I am, but 26 years old, and I have already acquired a large fortune. What shall I do to occupy myself the rest of my life? He didn't have to worry. Within a year, everything would have changed, and the path of his life would take him through some of the most bizarre twists possible. Born in Philadelphia to two successful Irish immigrant parents, Donnelly had established himself as a lawyer in Philadelphia. But after his marriage in 1856, he'd decided the world held bigger things for him, so he'd come to Minnesota. He was part of a generation of young men who saw the West as the promised land, a place of wild speculation, where their fortunes would be made and their characters forged. The spirit of the age was embodied in a quote often attributed to Horace Greeley, though he likely popularized it rather than coined it. "Go west, young man. Go west and grow up with the country." Donnelly took this to heart. Donnelly, in concert with a few other investors, developed a bold plan to acquire a large parcel of undeveloped land just down the Mississippi River from Hastings, Minnesota. While Hastings was a thriving town, Donnelly was sure the site he'd chosen was better, a better steamship landing and a more entrancing view of the river, imagining it a future hub for the northern Mississippi. They'd bought the land for roughly $6 a parcel, but were planning on selling those same parcels at $100 to $500 each. The town was named for Donnelly's business partner, John Nininger, but it would be Donnelly who'd be the voice and the face of the project, and Donnelly who would in time earn the nickname the Sage of Nininger. He portrayed the West as a land of wealth and wonder, a place that will yet play an important part in the great drama of human advancement. The West, he prophesied, would be the new Eden. Such boosterism depended on the lie that the land was itself uninhabited, when in reality, of course, the indigenous peoples of North America were being pushed steadily westward. Manifest destiny, as the policy came to be known, offered a mythological and seemingly predestined underpinning to a process of violent expropriation. Donnelly, like many, saw and embraced this, telling potential investors that the embers of the Indian's fire will scarcely have disappeared from the heath where his wigwam stood before the halls and palaces of the most elaborate social life will rise upon their site. Initially, things went well for Donnelly. Plots sold, the money rolled in, and he put a down payment on a massive ferry that would serve Nininger and bring commerce to the town. But the tide quickly turned, and instead of a boom town, Donnelly found ruin. In 1857, a panic swept the country's economy, constricting credit and drying up speculation. Nininger was just one of many casualties. He went bankrupt before the ferry could be delivered and defaulted on the balance. Donnelly's dream of a utopia in the West had met with the harsh reality of capitalism. He entered politics, going on to serve as the lieutenant governor of Minnesota and later in the U.S. House of Representatives before getting pushed out of politics in the 1870s, leaving him to pursue another career. Ignatius Donnelly had been to the ends of the earth, at least figuratively, and had met only financial ruin. Now he would recreate the history of a place that would never be touched by money, politics, or the imperfect hands of modern man. In 1882, he turned to publishing, producing an unexpected bestseller, Atlantis, the Antediluvian World.